Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are in paper 40, section 9, which is old single column, page 450. All right, we're wrapping up this paper tonight, and this whole block, you know, this whole block of papers on universes of beings. So we want to keep that in mind. We'll see that'll come up as we get in a little ways. So the only context that we need to remind ourselves of is just, you know, we're immediately in the midst of a series of three paragraphs, recall. We did father-fused mortals, then son-fused mortals, and those two sections in many ways went together. The two of them together help you to, you know, to really understand the whole picture. And then doing the son-fused mortals along with this last section, the ascendant destinies, that's a pair of sections also to give you the rest of the picture. And you'll see that, you know, it's like I was just saying, in the context of son-fused mortals, you understood father-fused mortals a lot more. And it's the same way here. A lot of the point of the spirit-fused mortal section isn't so much to talk about spirit-fused mortals per se extensively, but to use the fact of spirit-fused mortals to help understand your ascended destiny better. There's a number of things that become more clear when you think of, think about the specific example of spirit-fused mortals in that general context of ascension. It's more difficult to see in other ways. It's a way of focusing your attention on some particular issues of the ascendant career. And so that's the main modus operandi that they have going in here, is to leverage off of sun-fused and spirit-fused mortals to help understand your future. All right, so let's just get into it here.
Number 9, spirit-fused mortals. Ascending spirit-fused mortals are not third source personalities. They are included in the Father's personality circuit, but they have fused with individualizations of the pre-mind spirit of the third source and center. Such spirit fusion never occurs during the span of natural life. It takes place only at the time of mortal reawakening in the Marantia existence on the mansion worlds. In the fusion experience, there is no overlapping. The will creature is either spirit-fused, son-fused, or father-fused. Those who are adjuster or father-fused are never spirit or son-fused.
Let's just do that last part first, a little kind of technicality. And so there's a place provided, you know, and only one spirit fragment can fit in that place. You know, you can't cram two in there. And so, that's the main point, that just, a single temple has been established within, and it's just the perfect size for one spirit fragment. The issue of if there's going to be some sort of an augmentation of some kind of additional fragment, there's going to have to be some major modification made to your nature. And that takes you all the way to the end of the story, how you would get from a sixth stage spirit to a seventh stage spirit. That whole bit of transcending the finite and going into the absinite as a seven-stage spirit. Just think about that act of the Supreme Being reaching down and simultaneously, lifting the whole system up, giving it absinite capacity. So now there's room for that spirit fragment from the Supreme Being to make you a seven-stage spirit. Okay, but as a finite creature, there's only room for one, and that's what they're pointing out there.
But one at a time. In other words, some of these mortals had a thought adjuster during their life, and then they didn't end up fusing with the thought
adjuster. Right, but you got to look precisely.
So they do have, I understand, but in other words, they may have two, but not at the same time, basically, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, a father fragment can occupy the space for a stretch of time, and then a spirit fragment occupies that same space, but yeah, never simultaneously, and it's the same space. You know, that's just maybe, you know, another aspect of what I'm trying to stress. There's just one place. It's not like there's three different bins that you can stick spirit fragments in, and sometimes it gets stuck in one bin and not in the other two. I mean, that's the point they're trying to make. There's just one place. All right. Now, the other technicalities in there. The fact that you're calling it a spirit-fused mortal, it's certainly hearkening you all the way back up to the top. You notice they said third source and center, hearkening you all the way back up to the infinite spirit. And that's why they said what they said at the beginning, just because you're looking at something that's very definitively downstepped from the infinite spirit. Don't downstep everything from that fact, including the personality, you know, because the infinite spirit is also the reservoir for third source personalities. And so that's why they're making that distinction. Even though we're thinking about something that's going to be put into this person that's coming down from the third source and center, the infinite spirit, doesn't mean that everything has to come down. And so it's still, I mean, and that, of course, you know, like you were just saying, John, I mean, you think about a spirit-fused mortal. I mean, they start out just like we do, as a mortal with a thought adjuster and a personality from the father, right? So, I mean, obviously they're a first source personality, not a third source personality. You know, so that's why I'm stressing this. I mean, it seems obvious, so why did they put in something that seems, it's obvious? It's like, well, of course they're a father, you know, a first source personality. That's the point. Is that they're trying to get you to think very literally about this spirit fragment coming down, and don't think that just because it's that way with the father, where both the personality and the fragment come down from the same spot, it is, you know, it doesn't mean it happens here, that the personality and the fragment have to come down from the same reservoir. Okay. collection of reservoirs, as the case may be, because of course it's two different reservoirs that your personality and your thought adjuster come from, but you know, within the father, same individual. All right, then the other little technicality in there is pre-mind spirit. Okay, you know, a way of speaking of it in a parallel mode to talking about a father fragment being pre-personal. It's not just pre-personal in the sense that when I get it, personality doesn't identify with it yet. You know, it's only when I fuse with it, then personality is identified with it. So yeah, from my perspective, it's pre-personal. But it's also pre-personal in the source perspective. Okay, it's coming from an aspect of the father that in a top-down mode is pre-personal. The personal aspect of the father, you know, is a fact that's down further in the hierarchy than the source of the thought adjuster. So, you know, it's coming from the infinite upholder part of the father, and you think of that face of the father, the universal father, facet of deity of the father, as being down from that, in the same way that you think of, if you look at things from the proper way, really top down, the Paradise Trinity is above and prior, you know, logically prior to the three persons. You know, see, so that infinite upholder is up there more like with the Paradise Trinity and prior to the persons. So it's pre-personal, see, in a top-down point of view. It's pre-mind in the same way. The simplest way to think about that pre-mind is, we were just talking about the adjutants, the mind adjutants, you know, from the Creative Mother Spirit here recently, and we understood why they're called adjutant mind hyphen spirits. Why are they called mind spirits? You know, that's because in a top-down bestowal mode, it's the foundation is spirit, and then it's extended down into a mind ministry. And so that's why spirit is the second word, the foundation word, in the hyphenated compound word. It's a mind spirit in that top-down bestowing mode. If this spirit fragment that you're getting from the Creative Mother Spirit, see, is from that foundation level, like of the spirit hyphen mind, pre-mind, pre-downstepped, you know, as it were, see, in that vertical mode. But the fact that this spirit fragment needs to work just like a thought adjuster, it needs to not just be a merely spirit ministry above your mind, it needs to go down into your mind. See, and that the same way that that adjutant ministry starts at the spirit level and penetrates down into mind, see, this fragment does the same thing. It's a spirit fragment, but it has the ability to infuse down into the mind, just like that adjust or that that adjutant has that vertical top-down penetration. So that's why it works, you know, how it can work and do what it needs to do in being in your mind instead of above your mind. But it's technically a spirit fragment, it's pre-mind. But it can be, you know, minded just like the thought adjust can be personalized. So it's the exact same thing, thinking about it top down, that's from the source point, that pre makes sense as well. All right, so that's kind of the basic technicalities of the spirit-fused mortals. And then give us a little...
Just one other thing that I noticed, I say you've mentioned it a couple of times, and that's the taking place at the mortal reawakening.
Right. Right, so they build a body for, you know, an individual that's going to be a spirit-fuser. The guardian angel has the soul, right, you know, that the adjuster built. That soul is put into that body for it to make it be a Maharaja brain for that Maharaja body. And then instead of the adjuster coming back and plugging in and animating that individual, this spirit fragment is bestowed, plugs in and animates that individual. And, you know, apparently in very, very short order, once this individual is repersonalized, reanimated, you know, and going again, that fuses. You know, it's probably that day. You know, there must be some little startup time, you know, but once the system is fully up and running, then it just fuses. Just like they were describing, when you fuse in, you know, somewhere up your ascension career, like let's say you get out of your transport at the constellation level, you know, once you're brought out of that transit sleep, they're rekeying you. They do that. They're giving you this rekeyed form so that, you know, that you're ready for the world. You know, so in very short order, once they've brought you out of that and rekeyed you, then you're going to fuse because now there's the room for
it's
that
the same
to happen.
Soul that was embryonic in human form, right? Just not the thought adjuster who has the memory or something?
Well, the memory, we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay, yeah.
But the key here is not the memory. It's that spirit fragment. Spirit is self-animating substance. And that form has to be reanimated. Okay? Right now you have animation because life animation is attached to your, you know, associated with your matter. Okay? That's not the way it works there. So the way your soul, I mean, to think about that literal Maharaja structure that is your soul, why is it animated right now? It's not because it's made out of matter and there's life animation associated with it, like my body. It's because there's a thought adjuster as self-animating substance is plugged into it, okay? So when that adjuster pulls out, that soul is not animate anymore. And so as soon as it plugs in, then it's animate again. And so that's the basic thing. And then and you'll see it fuses, but with a little difference. It's not quite like the fusion that you're going to experience somewhere, you know, like in the mansion worlds. So let's see here.
The fact that these types of mortal creatures are not adjuster fusion candidates does not prevent the adjusters from indwelling them during the life in the flesh. Adjusters do work in the minds of such beings during the span of material life, but never become everlastingly one with their pupil souls. During this temporary sojourn, the adjusters effectively build up the same spirit counterpart of mortal nature, the soul, that they do in the candidates for adjuster fusion. Up to the time of mortal death, the work of the adjusters is wholly akin to their function in your own races. But upon mortal dissolution, the adjusters take eternal leave of these spirit fusion candidates, and proceeding directly to Divinington, the headquarters of all divine monitors, there await the new assignments of their order.
Just go ahead and read that next paragraph, Tim.
When such sleeping survivors are repersonalized on the mansion worlds, the place of the departed adjuster is filled by an individualization of the spirit of the divine minister. The representative of the infinite spirit in the local universe concerned. This spirit infusion constitutes these surviving creatures, spirit-fused mortals. Such beings are in every way your equals in mind and spirit, and they are indeed your contemporaries, sharing the mansion and Marantia spheres in common with your order of fusion candidates and with those who are to be sun-fused.
Okay. Most of that's pretty straightforward. Just trying to get the basics laid out for you if you don't know it already. But there's one key word to notice in there. It's reminding you of a difference in play. This spirit in fusion. Notice how they purposely didn't just say fusion. So I want to remind you of what's going on with them that happens to you as well. Like I said, I mean, to think about the sun and the spirit-fused mortals is to help to better understand your process. Okay, so I'm going through the mansion worlds, and I finally get to the point where I fuse with my thought adjuster. Think of that in the direct sense of that word fusion. Like when you take two solids and you fuse them together, you know, two blocks of iron or something, and you fuse them together. Okay, it's just they're just being glued together, at the surface, melted together into one fact, but just at the surface. It's not like they totally they melt totally together. Just the surface.
Deuterium hydrogen atoms fuse.
Okay. Just that word fusion, gets used for a lot of things, but you need to appreciate that the foundational meaning of the word is just gluing the surfaces together. Okay, so that's when you fuse with your thought adjuster, that's what it's going to be. Your soul is one of my hands, and the thought adjuster here is the other hand, and the two fists are just gluing together. And then from that point, when you fuse all the way up until you leave the local universe as a first stage spirit, there's a process of infusion that you undergo. That, slowly you infuse into that thought adjuster. While you aren't totally within, there's scaffolding holding up that soul. Right, you have a Marantia body. That's the scaffolding that's holding up that thing that's dangling off the side. Okay, when you leave the local universe as a first stage spirit, your body is that spirit fragment of the adjuster. Okay, but it's been completely modified because you've melted into it. Okay, you've infused. That's the process. You go through that long process of slowly infusing until finally you don't need any scaffolding underneath you anymore. You don't need a Marantia body anymore. You've got your own body, you know, the adjuster, your first stage spirit. Okay, see, there's a, at this point, there's more than just mere fusion going on with these spirit-fused mortals at this point. There is an initial degree of infusion that's occurring, because, you know, they could be waking up as a seventh circler and fusing. It has nothing to do with the spirit of truth, right? They were doing this long before Michael bestowed himself, or, you know, so it, you know, or even on the very first world, you know, that had primitive mortals that were spirit fusers, you know, there wasn't a bestowal sun even on that first world to have, you know, so long before you have anything that can get you to fuse, even though you're not a third circler, okay, they fuse. I see, so there's that. Because unlike the thought adjuster, this spirit fragment can descend farther. A father fragment can only come down to the supreme experiential level. This fragment, just like the seven adjutants, you know, the way they can penetrate all the way down and give mind to an amoeba, okay, the first adjutant. Okay. They can penetrate all the way down into the finite experiential level. Right. So this spirit fragment infuses, it bridges all that gap, penetrates down into, you know, wherever you are, seventh circle or whatever. You know, remember, if they're a primitive mortal, we read just a little bit ago they never make it to third circler. You know, on their world, they never had their own personal angels on their world. You know, so they're definitely 4, 5, 6, or 7. Okay, those spirit fusers. And so that's why they're saying infusion. Those individuals are just by fiat are getting that whole range of experiential development given to them. Whereas you have to go through the whole range. We're going to see this later in the next section as well. This is part of the theme of these last two sections, to appreciate this, that the Trinity and the Mother can give you measures of completeness without you having to go through a whole long process. They just give it to you by fiat. Okay? So they don't, you know... So they have to ascend the whole way and mature up to Salvington just like you do. So it's not like they get, you know, everything by fiat, by grace. But they get that initial little measure to the point where you can fuse by fiat. It's kind of the benefit of being primitive. Say, let's think about the primitive ones rather than just the spirit-fused worlds, you know. But... you know, they live this very lowly primitive life, but they get this little bonus here. They wake up, they get this little jump start, and can really then, you know, they don't have to labor in such, you know, very primitive nature on the first mansion world. They, you know, they can engage the first mansion world with a bit of equality to everyone else. Okay, here first and then, yeah.
The process that you're describing reminds me a little bit about the psychic circles and how we have to synchronize with these mm-hmm. circles, you know, as this growth process. Right. And I see it as just so pretty scientific kind of synchronizing, just everything just kind of fitting. And then finally, when it does fit, only they get it to fit. You know,
well, see, they get a lot of that seventh to third process done for them. See, yeah. Effectively what's going on there. You know, that seventh to third process that you're going to have to work through, you know, probably in the first five mansion worlds, okay, a lot of that, see, they just get. Now, they're not going to have everything that you're going to have on the fifth mansion world when you fuse. You know, they aren't going to just jump from the first to the fifth mansion world. But see, in this basic, this element of this kind of factual element of getting connected to the spirit fragment, that part is just done for them. And then they work on building around that. See, so they get to do a process that you don't get to do. They, you know, they get to be fused with the fragment and go through those early stage processes while they're fused, whereas you're still trying to get to the point of fusion. See, so they add a part to supremacy that you can't add. Right? Doing early stage developments while fused. Whereas you can only do later stage developments while fused because, you know, you're trying to get to fusion. No, I mean, once it, you know, that's the thing. See, so you have this extremely primitive human that didn't do much of anything on their mortal world, you know, except throw a spear. They wake up, get fused, and they're part of eternity.
Well,
that
shall be first.
Yeah, see, so that's another theme of here, trying to, well, who is really, you know, higher or lower? Yeah. This is another theme that's in here, trying to get you to not, yeah. Not get too self-centered about the picture here. Okay, and the other thing you see there, notice they didn't say third source and center like they did above. You know, they actually directly said the representative of the infinite spirit. Like I said, that's the point, is to appreciate that, you know, you're not looking at a downstepped expression of the conjoined actor, that aspect of the third source and center. You're looking at the downstepped expressions of the infinite spirit aspect of the third source and center. Okay. I think that was, yeah, I think that's, yeah, keep going. Oh, that's right, there was a question over here. I knew there was something else.
A technical aspect, the relationship of the adjuster to the soul. Mm-hmm. As you're saying, when the adjuster leaves, the animation goes out of the soul.
Right, it's an inanimate object at that point, yes.
Okay. And when it comes back, it reanimates. Right. But it's not fused to the soul. But it has a relationship to the soul. What's that relationship? Is it just nearby?
I mean, one way I've thought of visualizing it, you know, again, just to have an analogy, you know, you're seeking an analogy. You know, when you think of the soul, literally, like they suggest, as being a weave, you know, so that you have this weave of physical energy fibers and spirit energy fibers, you know, right angles to each other, and this woven structure. Think about the adjuster being the core of the spirit threads. And so when the adjuster pulls out, think of it literally pulling those threads out of the cores of those spirit fibers, and unplugging. So when it comes back, it just slips itself into the cores of those spirit fiber threads. You know, and that reanimates the soul. I mean, that's a simple kind of an analogy way of picturing the relationship. It's not the soul, but it's a foundation for the soul. See, that core of that spirit fiber, think of that as a, you know, as a foundation for that spirit fiber, and those spirit fibers as being a foundation for the physical energy fibers, because after all, the spirit fibers are which ones? The warp or the woof?
Warp.
The warp, the foundation fibers. Right? See, so just that's the validity of that analogy, you know, is to think of it in a foundational, you know, hierarchical sense. And so that the adjuster is there to be the foundation for the whole structure. You know, I mean, it's the one that produced it. Remember, there's a mystery of mysteries, how a Marantia structure can be made by an adjuster, you know, without a Marantia power supervisor. Okay? I mean, you know, that's one of the mysteries of Ascendington, you know, secrets of Ascendington. You know, the revelators don't understand that. You know, how it is that you make Marantia substance without a Marantia power supervisor. I mean, they watch Marantia power supervisors and master physical controllers make Marantia substance all the time, building buildings and whatnot. Okay? They know exactly how that works, and there's no Marantia power supervisor here, you know, that's making my soul with master physical controllers. So it's very mysterious how this thing even comes into existence. Right? See, so it's very much founded upon the fact of the adjuster. And I don't, I mean, I could rationalize that some more for you, explain that some more, but we don't go too far afield. All right, so let's keep going here.
There is, however, one particular in which spirit-fused mortals differ from their ascendant brethren. Mortal memory of human experience on the material worlds of origin survives death in the flesh because the indwelling adjuster has acquired a spirit counterpart or transcript of those events of human life which were of spiritual significance. But with spirit-fused mortals, there exists no such mechanism whereby human memory may persist. The adjuster transcripts of memory are full and intact, but these acquisitions are experiential possessions of the departed adjusters and are not available to the creatures of their former indwelling, who therefore awaken in the resurrection halls of the Marantia spheres of Nebadon as if they were newly created beings, creatures without consciousness of former existence.
Okay, and you know, they're immediately going to transition, and you know, about how this is very relevant for you as well. But let's just explain it here in just a pure state with the spirit-fused mortals. All right. So obviously, you know, the material brain doesn't get drug up to the first mansion world so that you can have the memories that are stored in that material brain. You know, and the adjuster's not there either. So there's no memories.
Which we forgot anyway.
Okay. Right. So. Just think about, you know, why this is, you know, what's going on. Okay, they give you the first little clue there that that the only, you know, even with the adjuster, the only thing the adjuster has, because none of us get our brain drug, you know, material brain taken up there so that we have the memories that are stored in it. You know, so this whole bit about what memories does the adjuster have? Those events of the human life which were of spiritual significance. Now, very important to not use your old wineskins to interpret that sentence. By spiritual, we don't mean anything that any human has ever meant by the word spiritual. Okay? Nothing, even remotely, what any human has ever meant by the word spiritual. So it just—it doesn't mean those times when you were blissing out and the adjuster memory and remembers that. Okay, by spiritual they mean that which was holistic in the upper domain of the hourglass. Holistic, like H-O-L-Y, spirit, Holy Spirit. Okay, in order to have the adjuster be conscious of anything that you're doing, it has to be something that resonates with the adjuster. In order for it to resonate with the adjuster, it has to have a threefold actuality that's been encompassed into a triunity. Okay? And that's the kind of thing that the adjuster resonates with. It has to be cosmic-like. Okay? So, you know, why does the adjuster remember something? Because if it actually is aware of something, it copies what it feels. You know, it remembers it because it literally made a copy of what it felt. You know, every time that there's a holistic form in the upper domain of the hourglass, in the upper part of your mind, you know, the adjuster feels that and copies what it felt. And it feels perfectly, so it copies it perfectly. Okay? But if you, you know, obviously, if all you're doing is merely adjutant stuff in the lower domain of the hourglass, first three levels of meaning, okay, the adjuster doesn't feel anything. It's not aware of any of that stuff.
Acknowledge.
Well, just, I mean, just basic association with the environment things that don't have a full, holistic, personal reflection, okay, the adjuster doesn't feel any of that. And even if you, you know, let's say, let's, you know, pick on the religious mode here. You know, let's say you're amping up the religious impulse in the lower domain of the hourglass. Okay, you have a strong desire to experience in that mode more than just the introductory feeling that the sixth adjutant can give you. Okay, you can, because you're a person, you can start to amp that up with the third cosmic intuition, the spiritual insight. Like the revelators say, if you start to actually bring in that higher motion, that higher energy, you can get something that's genuinely called a fanatic, or, you know, religious fanaticism. To get full-on fanatic, you can't just do that with the sixth adjutant. You gotta amp it up. Okay. Now you say, well, that's okay. Maybe it's misguided and stuff, but isn't that something that the adjuster will feel? I mean, I have to use the sixth level of meaning where the spiritual insight is in order to do that. You know, isn't the adjuster right there? And so I'm hitting the ceiling and he'd feel it? No, the adjuster isn't just at the ceiling. The adjuster embodies the whole. In order for the adjuster to feel it, there has to be a symmetry of logical acumen, moral discrimination, and spiritual insight. Encompassed with your personality, realityized, it'll feel that whole. It doesn't inhabit a part. It inhabits the whole. Okay, and so that's what they mean by, you know, see, I've pointed this out a number of times. You have to look at the context. If they say spiritual, do they mean merely spiritual? Or do they mean holistically spiritual? Like the Holy Spirit. Which do they mean? You got to figure out in the context. So it works both ways. You know, sometimes they'll say spiritual insight when they mean just the third cosmic intuition, not the other two. Other times they say spiritual insight, they mean all three together. You've got to see and understand in the context. So the word spiritual has to be properly interpreted. All right, so that's, you know, this question that many people have, you know, what is it that the adjuster is going to remember? Only your most holy, personal, you know, periods of consciousness will be remembered by the adjuster.
Personalities.
Yeah, it has to be fully personal. You remember that one line about the half-hearted, you know, effort will be of no avail?
Okay, you do this remember is personalities.
Maybe. Right, wait, we haven't gotten there yet. Don't jump again. Just hold on. One step at a time. One step at a time. that's a paragraph right down here.
Give an example. Okay. Of what you think you do or don't?
I can't. I mean, the point I'm trying to make is I'm trying to motivate what they say next to appreciate that this bit about the spirit fused mortals is very relevant to you. Yeah. Most of, you know, of what you're going to have for memories of this life, you're going to have to acquire the same way a spirit fuser does. The adjuster's not going to remember it because we have very little ability in this life to do this profound holistic phenomenon, especially with the Swiss cheese biologic foundation that I have, you know, because of the default. I have very little ability.
You don't remember some of the things that were lessons that were important.
See, that's the whole thing. It appears to be a dichotomy. What good is this life if I don't remember it? I'm trying to motivate. Why did they have this section in here?
Yeah,
you will remember it, but you won't remember most of it via the adjuster.
All of records.
What you're about to read here is important to you. Okay, don't think, oh, that's just those, you know, lower life forms that are spirit fusers. I'm a higher life form, and I'm going to remember everything because I have an adjuster. It doesn't work that way. I mean, if you were in a seven-stage light and life world, okay, it'd be different. But remember how lowly we are here, how little of actual resonance with the adjuster you can do. And then just to stress this a little bit more, how little the adjuster can feel. Like I just stressed, the adjuster can only come down to the supreme experiential level. It does not penetrate into the finite experiential level until you fuse with it. They tell you that up in the adjuster papers. It cannot feel anything in the finite experiential level. See, so in order for you to feel it, I mean, for it to feel you, you have to have somehow resonated the Supreme's experiential level it's on. It's like, well, so in other words, only the Supreme things that I do? Yeah, it would be the case if there wasn't a gift of grace that was given to you. Remember that initial encirclement in the Holy Spirit that you were given by grace? That's a supreme thread. And the mother is a downstepping phenomenon, a penetrating phenomenon. Even though the adjuster can't penetrate below the supreme experiential level, the mother can. That encirclement in the Holy Spirit, it gives you a core down in the midst of your finite experiences. If you do a genuine, holistic, finite experiential form in your mind, via that link, that thread that binds you to the adjuster, it will feel it. But it has to be holistic. See, it has to be as close to supreme-like as possible. It can't be part-like, or it's no way it's going to somehow be upsteppable to resonate with the supreme experiential level where the adjuster is. So just all of that is just to stress that the spirit fusers, you know, don't even have their most profound supreme memory when they wake up.
They just wake up.
They got nothing. Okay? You'll have a handful of very, very high transcendent things that you experienced that actually, you know, resonated with the adjuster. All the rest of it, you're going to have to do just like they do. It's a humbling fact how much you got to trust God. Okay? It's like, no, I don't need you, God. I got this. I have a really good memory. Okay? No. God says, I'm going to take it all away from you. You got to trust that you can get it back through the system I've set up. Okay?
It's worth getting back.
Okay? All right, so let's see what we've got here then.
Such children of the local universe are enabled to repossess themselves of much of their former human memory experience through having it retold by the associated seraphim and cherubim and by consulting the records of the mortal career filed by the recording angels. This they can do with undoubted assurance because the surviving soul of experiential origin in the material and mortal life, while having no memory of mortal events, does have a residual experiential recognition response to these unremembered events of past experience.
Okay. The soul has a form, a shape, that when it's exposed to your experiences, they will resonate in that. Think of it as a resonance cavity, organ pipe sense, you know, where at a given frequency that organ pipe resonates, okay? Won't resonate at any frequency, only at a certain one, okay? So in a very complex way, you have this resonance cavity, and in actual experience of yours, there'll be this resonance, experiential recognition response. Okay, and you say, well, that sounds, I want it to be more solid than that. I want my memories. Okay, the only reason that you have your memories is the same way. Okay, their memories are in your brain. Okay, and your brain retells the story just like the seraphim do. And your mind, which is above your brain, feels that, it's like, oh, that's my story. That story, when the brain tells it, your mind resonates with it, and that's why it feels like it's your memory. It's no different. It doesn't matter if a seraphim tells it or your brain tells it. It doesn't make it one lick of difference. The only way it feels like it's yours is because of this resonance, okay? That the story the brain tells is not my brain tells is not the story that Andre's brain tells. I mean, if I heard Andre's brain tell me a story, it wouldn't feel like, it wouldn't resonate, because my mind is not, they don't match, they're not of the same form, okay? So it's the same way here. You're on the mansion world, and I wake up, and they tell me a story from Barbara's life, and there's no resonance, it just falls dead on me. They tell me a story about my life, and it's alive in my mind. Okay, it resonates. it sets my mind in motion, whereas Barbara's story does not set my mind in motion. But my story will. Just like when my brain tells the story right now out of memory, it sets my mind in motion. Okay, so that's what's going on here. And like the, you know, much of their former human memory, you know, so in the case of the spirit fusers, the part that's not much is the complete, you know, very low level, you know, they don't get reminded of every breath they took and blah, 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 how many times their heart beated and, okay. You know, not same way with you. You know, and, you know, it's still appropriate that much of your former, because that, that upper crust, just like that lower crust, you know, is very thin. The tiny little things at the bottom and the top are not remembered in spirit fuser, and all you get in addition is just that tiny little crust at the top that's adjuster memory. You know, but again, the adjuster is going to tell the story, and then your mind is going to resonate with it. Right? It, you don't actually, you're not conscious of your memories, because your memories are in a substance, either spirit substance or material substance. You're only conscious of what's in your mind. So something has to tell the story and get it into your mind, and then you know it. And it doesn't matter who tells the story. Yeah?
So within your story, you have other people. So then your story includes them, and your mind resonates. That story with them included in it.
So yeah.
Then later on, that other person, if you tell the same story and the two incidents happened at the same time, they'll resonate together.
Exactly. That's exactly what they're about to say next. See, you logically knew what had to be next. All right, that obviously follows logically. So it's the next thing they talk about. You know, what happens when you bring in other people into this? And you get this super additive collective phenomenon going.
Yep. Two comments.
Yep.
One is things you can't forget in time, you forget in eternity. Mm-hmm. You just don't remember them, number one.
Right.
Which, so it's not even eternity, it's pretty quickly sometimes.
Right.
And the other is, you know, so let's say I'm a really bad guy. And, you know, and I wake up and I don't remember how bad I was.
Right, you won't remember any of that.
Doesn't mean I still wasn't bad.
No. Yeah, you know, think about, you know, think about with the adjuster. The adjuster is not conscious of your evil, only of your sin. Right? I mean, it's always subservient to your will. You know, it doesn't copy evil. It'll copy sin. Okay? So, you know, you don't have to just be, you know, violating the taboos of your tribe. I mean, you could be literally evil. Okay, the adjuster doesn't have any, you know, feeling of that. See, so no, you don't wake up with any of that.
So I'm not still evil anymore.
Right. In that life, you perforce don't serve that master. Right. So, you know, think about the grace of this. Think about what a great, you know, to be able to start out so fresh. Where.
But that seems like too good of a get out of jail free card for a lot of people.
You know. Of course it does. That's why we invented hell, and that's why the fifth epical revelation is just not going to be what most people want to hear. You know, because it doesn't have a substitute. They want to get rid of hell, but not really. They just want to get rid of the, you know, the silly anthropomorphic notion of hell, but they still want the basic idea in play somehow, you know, where those, you know, that beset them during their life get punished for it in some way. Okay? No. God, then you need a God of finite love instead of a God of absolute love.
You say if you survive a lot.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But it's still the case. Yeah. It's still the case that, you know, remember, even if you're evil a lot, okay, you are a person. You're not a machine that's evil. There is bound to be some little bit of impact where it went beyond mere passive evil. And had some active, so there probably is some little bit of twisting that you've put into your soul. And even if you don't have the twisted matter that got your mind going in that mode during this life, you know, the branch of mind that seats on that soul could have an initial little twist in it that you put there, a little shadow cast by this misguided life. You know, and so you could get started off on a wrong track. You know, and you're very fluid there. So, you know, a half a degree of divergence can exponentiate into, you know, into 60 degrees in short order. Okay. Yep.
There's something, a question that's mm-hmm. come in, but I have a question too.
Okay. All right.
I think we talked about as we go on, and we're going through, you know, different worlds, and we have guides and things. I think one of the times weren't there some of our guides that are helping us examine our memories and go back.
Right, many times up through your reviewing, yes.
Yeah, lots of reviewing of, mm-hmm. of what our history is and what we, you right. know, have been through.
Right? Yeah, yeah, I mean.
So it's not like it's going to be totally gone and we won't have to look at it and it's, you know, but we're going to build on it and turn it into positives.
Yeah, actually, you probably have more things that you can remember up there than you remember here. Remember, you know, I mean, you know, there's so little that we actually remembered, you know, at any point right now, you know, consciously. But, you know, everything of any, you know, even minute consequence is all recorded and everything. So, you know, you'll be able to bring back, you know, all kinds of stuff that you don't even have right now. So, I mean, you're not going to feel like you lost anything. It's like, wait a minute, that's too much. I don't need to remember all that stuff. You know, it's more likely the mode it'll be in. You'll say, look, can we spread this out over the several mansion worlds so I don't have to try to somehow hold all it in my head in the first mansion world? Because that's too much. I want to be kind of ignorant like I was back in my mortal life, and I only remembered a few things, and I was happy. So you'll be overwhelmed by, you know, by things. All right.
And then Pam said, I would think since they fuse with the spirit, it is not necessary to have memories of the mortal life as they are newly created beings. Your mission is totally different than the other type fusers. Memory here was not important for them. They are to go into the spirit realm, which would be motherlike.
If this life wasn't important to them, they wouldn't have lived it. You know, they would have been born an angel. But they're not. They're born immortal. You know, it's just, I mean, the thing I'm trying to stress here is, you know, we think we're losing something with this memory. It's like, you know, you don't have it right now. You don't actually possess your memories right now. They're not yours. They're always being stored in a substance. Okay? Your mind is where your consciousness is, where you are. Okay? They're trying to get you to distinguish this properly, that they'll have all of their memories from this life, those spirit fusers, because they need them, and the whole universe needs them. It's just that they're not stored, in a blob of matter like they were during their life. They're recorded in much better form by the angels in a nice indelible record. And can be read back to you precisely. How difficult is it for you to read back a memory precisely? Eh? It can be really difficult. See, you won't have to struggle through that anymore. The very, you know, limited, you know, storytelling that your brain can do right now. The angels can tell it perfectly. They won't miss a single detail. You know, your brain misses all kinds of details. And, there'll be much better memories when they're told by an angel than when they're told by your brain. Or told, you know, I mean, obviously with the adjuster, the adjuster, you know, is going to perfectly tell what it knows, but it knows so little. Okay, again, so, you know, the really rich stuff that you want to remember, the adjuster's memory is the stuff that you weren't hardly even conscious of. It was basically a superconscious phenomenon. That's what it remembers. You know, the things that you're yearning to remember, the angels have recorded it, and they've done it perfectly. And you'll reacquire it better than you ever had it. You know, you'll remember it in the next life better than you experienced it during this life. Right? So you won't lose anything. All right. Yeah, that win spirit, I think.
When a spirit-fused mortal is told about the events of the unremembered past experience, there is an immediate response of experiential recognition within the soul identity of such a survivor, which instantly invests the narrated event with the emotional tinge of reality and with the intellectual quality of fact. And this dual response constitutes the reconstruction, recognition, and validation of an unremembered facet of mortal experience.
Not to get too technical, but the reason they threw in that parenthetical identity, because if you think about this very precisely and logically, you're going, no, wait a minute. My soul is going to help me remember something that the adjuster never felt. Isn't that illogical? Remember that the soul isn't just an actuality. The only reason there is a soul is because it's a copy of a personalized, a realityized expression in your mind. It's important that that soul has two aspects to it, which they'll remind us of when we get to the first Imagine World, the paper, you know, and they talk about the Imagine Worlds. But your personality is related to lowly things as well as higher things. And that soul, has not only the actuality structure, but the reality essence, maybe, or some more kind of abstract word I'm seeking for there. That's the fact that, see, now your personality identifies with that soul, remember, in the next life, whereas right now it's not identified with your soul, it's identified with your agitated mind, but it identifies with that soul. And because that personality has finite, absolute, and absolute dimensions, you know, it spans everything. So even though it was something the adjuster didn't directly feel, it was something that was personal, and so it can be refelt. Okay. That's why they threw in that little parenthetical of identity to remind you it's not just the actuality of a blob of morontious substance. It's something that your personality can re-identify with, which means it's not random. It's absolutely unique. You know, your personality can't identify with any old soul, only that one soul. See, so that soul must somehow embody that uniqueness that the personality can rematch to. Okay. All right. Keep going.
Even with adjuster fusion candidates, only those human experiences which were of spiritual value are common possessions of the surviving mortal and the returning adjuster, and hence are immediately remembered subsequent to mortal survival. Concerning those happenings which were not of spiritual significance, even these adjuster fusers must depend upon the attribute of recognition response in the surviving soul. And since any one event may have a spiritual connotation to one mortal, but not to another, it becomes possible for a group of contemporary ascenders from the same planet to pull their store of adjuster-remembered events and thus to reconstruct any experience which they had in common and which was of spiritual value in the life of any one of them.
So just like Doug was logically deducing, right, so you start out as an individual, and then you augment by getting reconnected into a collective memory, okay, and then it's all going to be there in spades.
It doesn't sound that rare.
What was that?
It doesn't sound that rare.
What? Oh,
this is kind of recounting here.
Yes. Mean, and that's kind of the important thing that. This little, there's, when I said it was really small, what the adjuster remembers, I'm speaking just of you. The other thing to remember about, I said it had to be cosmic. This distinction is vital, right? I mean, these true memories are not just all resident in you. They're part of the whole cosmic system. See, so to actually really get the fullness of them, you need to have the whole cosmic system to be plugged into. just in and of yourself, it's very limited. The things that are true, because the things that are genuinely true are part of a system. You're not an island universe. See, so a lot. You know, so what you're sensing there is true. See, Andre, that you will via the collective of the adjusters, you'll get a lot more than you got just from your adjuster. You know, and at that point, you'll start to really understand that you're a cosmic citizen. You know, and that the whole point is to start thinking of yourself as being fundamentally, you know, in a cosmic web. You know, that it's a collective consciousness that you're going to be functioning in. More and more collective as the higher you go, which means you have to somehow have an ability to stay individuated in the midst of a tendency to diffuse. You know, but you'll start to experience that, how much you actually, even in this life, are spread out outside of you. The real you is not all just, you know, located on the blob, right? So, yeah, it'll be a great first lesson in what, you know, what you'll experience when you're on the Isle of Paradise, you know, when you're just completely linked in to all of those infinite, you know, essentially infinite from your perspective, number of beings on the Isle of Paradise, you know, in this intimate way, and yet you're not a drop of water in the ocean. But it's like you're in the ocean, and you ought to be blended in like a drop, but you aren't. You're integrous and yet connected like that, you know, of everyone else and still you.
One relevant statement, you know, from the Trinitized Sons of God is where they talk about mighty messengers. And this is a curious statement because you wonder how it also pertains to the mortal life. But they say mighty messengers are fully conscious of their entire ascendant careers. Right. And that is why they are such useful and sympathetic ministers, understanding messengers for service on any world of space or to any creature of time. Now, they're have memories of they're fully conscious of their entire ascendant careers.
Right, so that's...
Take that to mean.
Okay, I mean, so for the people on the webinar, he's reading the passage about the mighty messengers being fully conscious of their entire ascendant career. That's because... they got right up to being inducted into the core of finality, just like you will, you know, and then got pulled out by the Paradise Trinity. But prior to being pulled out of the Paradise Trinity is what's relevant to understanding that. I mean, you as a finaliter are fully conscious of your entire vertical nature, you know, and not only conscious, but you can come, you know, out from Paradise and go to a mortal sphere and see this room as this room is, as a finaliter, even though none of us can even remotely see a finaliter. We've talked about that. It's not a bi-directional phenomenon. You know, they're fully related to even the lowest levels of finite experience still. So their memories of those lowest levels of the finite experience are still fully poignant and real. They haven't burned any bridges, right? So that's what they mean by that. And you'll be the same way as a finaliter. You'll be this incredible vertical extended phenomenon. You won't just be something that's floating way up high. You'll be that and everything all the way down to feet and dirt. I mean, I go all the way down, you know, to the bottoms of the human level. I mean, I don't have conscious memories that really extend down into the animal level of the vertical hierarchy, but because I don't lose my experiential relationship with the lowest levels, my memories there are still just as tangible as they were when that's all I had was that lowest level of experience. Okay.
While we understand such techniques of memory reconstruction fairly well, we do not grasp the technique of personality recognition. Personalities of one-time association mutually respond quite independently of the operation of memory, albeit memory itself and the techniques of its reconstruction are necessary to invest such mutual personality response with the fullness of recognition.
Okay, see, so here is a great example of how they're used, leveraging off the spirit-fused mortals to understand yourself better. Because they can, you know, when they say quite independently of the operation of memory, okay, we don't supply that example, but the spirit fusers, you know, supply this, you know, test this very definitively. So they watch two spirit fusers wake up, okay, and they have zero memory, the two of them, but they're watching the mind energy that's seated on their souls, and you know they know these two had personal connection on their mortal world, and they're watching that mind energy, and they see this resonance. You know, when the two are, you know, are brought together, they have not the slightest memory of each other, zero. But they see the mind resonate, and they go, okay, there's something going on here. You know, this has nothing to do with, you know, reconstructed memories resonating with each other. How is it that these two have a resonance? How do they, you know, when they don't know they've ever, you know, interacted personally before? This distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, the individual members are not connected with each other except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole.
But that's an okay? System.
If those two had a genuine personal connection, there was a third party involved. Okay? Because none of us connect to each other in a genuine personal way in and of ourselves. Only through the individuality of the whole is that linkage made. There's an absolutely unique form in the Creative Mother Spirit's mind that resulted from any two humans of absolutely unique personalities having a genuine personal relationship, the superadditive consequence of that. You know, there's no, you know, the universal father can't make a form like that in the mind energy system. The eternal son can't. Anyway, your relationship with the eternal son can't. You know, two personalities are absolutely unique. That form in her mind energy system, which she still remembers completely, it's her mind, okay, is there. Okay? And the moment those two persons connect again, they're connecting through that domain of her mind. There's the superadditive consequence of them is there still. And it, you know, the shadow is cast down. The two resonate with each other, even though they don't have anything, but she does. Okay. So that's why that personality works, is because it's not your mind, it's because it's her mind, then and, you know, and now.
So two questions. One is, mm-hmm. you know, on the quote that you do, the sentence right before that
right.
is talking about, you know, relationships.
Talking relationships and systems, right?
So relationships
right.
is two right. people one-on-one versus a system, right?
Right.
So that's, I mean, maybe I'm misunderstanding that. I don't
well,
know.
No, the deal with that is that this distinction is vital, okay, for in a cosmic system. You as a cosmic system, a cosmic individual, only relate in a system way. A pure relationship, just, you know, okay, two blobs of matter bump each other, okay, but, you know, any other just actuality-like interaction, that's one thing, but to actually really interact, you can only do it through the individuality of the whole and in relation to the whole. To really interact, not just actually, that's the point they're trying to make. See, that's why they say this distinction is vital.
So one okay. other question, I got that part. Secondly is, you know, they say when the first thing you do in your first 10 days when you wake up is look up your friends or your family, so you've got to remember them.
Right, see, that's why they're saying, you know, with you, you're going to wake up with some memory. So they can't, you know, they go, well, I see this resonance between these two persons, but it's probably because they have these little bits of memory. But they can do the test very definitively with spirit fusers. not one shred of memory. They haven't reconstructed any memory in them. And they see them resonate. And going, ah, there's something beyond what's obvious here. I mean, remember, when they say they don't understand, that means it doesn't involve a father-like, you know, overt phenomenon that they can analyze and measure and quantify, you know, 5.38, you know, units of recognition. Okay? In a 5.68 degree mind, you know, et cetera. I mean, they, you know, it's going to be very intensely measurable. If they can't understand it, whenever they say that, that means it involves the whole. Okay? Because the whole is not discernible to the parts, no matter how big the part is. Okay? And so when the whole does something, it's mysterious to the parts who are understanding part to part. Right? They can watch the seraphim tell the story. They can watch the person's mind energy take a form. They can measure its dimensions. Okay? They know exactly how all that works. But this stuff that isn't part-like, that isn't localized, that's just part of the whole, is not understandable, okay, and is invisible. But they know it's there because they can see it happening, and there were no parts interacting. All right. Oh, there's some. Yep.
Yeah. If we're thinking about our temple inside of us, mm-hmm. and if we think about like the walls are coated with like a clay or something, soft clay,
mm-hmm.
and over the course of our life, we're sometimes
carving out channels in that.
Yeah, carving yep. out channels, imprinting, you know,
yep.
pressing,
yep.
texturing, personal, you know, customizing.
Yes, yes.
And then.
And that's copied into your soul.
And then when the soul goes in there, it flavors the soul. The shaping of it in there that we've made, you know, goes into the soul. Mm-hmm. And then the soul knows that flavor, right. as it were, or that tuning, as it were.
Yes.
Very uniquely, very intricately.
Yes. Yes. That's what we're talking about, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and so, like I said, if the seraphim tells me my story, it'll set my mind in motion a certain way, and that mind can move in that way because the grooves in my soul allow for the mind to move that way. If they tell me another story, it sets my mind in motion in a different way, and the mind can't move that way because it slams into the walls, and immediately that flow is stopped. There's no channel for that flow to flow through. See, so it only resonates with your story. It's like, you know, just a river carving a, you know, meandering, you know, gorge, you know, that, you know, and long, you know, millions of years after the river's gone, the meandering gorge is still there. You know that the river didn't flow in a straight line. It flowed in that meandering path, right? Your soul is like that. It knows how your mind flows. It won't allow any other flow.
I really like the musical terminology on mm-hmm. this because it carries beyond, you know, one little analogy,
yeah.
You know, with the harmony and the flow. And
that's why they use the harmony attunement. You know, they use that analogy because it's the most effective analogy, you know, usually, yeah. You know, and even the fact that it's got to be threefold, like I was saying, you know, you have to actually strike a chord and then the adjuster remembers that. If you just strike one key, the adjuster doesn't feel that and won't remember it. You know, if you're a one-trick pony of the third cosmic intuition, it doesn't remember that. It doesn't matter how hard you pound on that one. Okay, you've got to strike all three together for it to hear it. Right? It can't hear anything except harmony.
Okay. A spirit-fused survivor is also able to learn much about the life he lived in the flesh by revisiting his nativity world subsequent to the planetary dispensation in which he lived. Such children of spirit fusion are enabled to enjoy these opportunities for investigating their human careers, since they are in general confined to the service of the local universe. They do not share your high and exalted destiny in the paradise core of the finality. Only adjuster-fused mortals or other especially embraced ascendant beings are mustered into the ranks of those who await the eternal deity adventure. Spirit-fused mortals are the permanent citizens of the local universes. They may aspire to paradise destiny, but they cannot be sure of it. Nebadon, their universe home, is the eighth group of worlds encircling Salvington, a destiny heaven of nature and location, much like the one envisioned by the planetary traditions of Urantia.
Okay, we'll get to the last part in just a minute here. Why is what they're saying in the first two-thirds of that paragraph relevant to you? It's not just the fact that the spirit fusers are permanent inhabitants of the local universe and are rattling around in it for a long time, and so they'll get back to their mortal origin sphere, at some point, inexorably. They're rattling around within the local universe for, millions and billions and trillions of years. Think about the flip side of that with you, okay? You're making a beeline. You know, it's very unlikely that you're going to be able to go back to your mortal origin sphere, in the next dispensation, because you're going to be long gone in your track, okay? You're not looking back, you're looking up, you're heading towards paradise. And so that's the flip side of that, between the lines, is reminding you, if you're thinking about that, it's not likely to happen. I mean, you're leaving your mortal origin world in the rearview mirror, okay? And, especially when you're thinking about dispensations, unless you happen to, like you were John the Baptist, okay, that, was right on the boundary line, and so, he wakes up in the mansion world, it's already the next dispensation, okay? But, what if the next dispensation isn't for, 500,000 years? Okay, I mean, you're going to be way, down the track, you're not going to be, you're maybe outside of the local universe, so.
Maybe on the mansion world.
To our native sphere. Right? Whenever we meet someone that lived their life on that native sphere, it must be just a wonderful experience, because...
Yeah, especially the higher you get, the more...
I don't know, we're the first planet in the universe.
No, but it'll still be fantastic, just for the simple reason that we're talking about here, the resonance, if you've never met that person before, you can acquire things that you don't remember by meeting that person. Maybe you finally meet them on the Isle of Paradise, and you finally get some memories reconstructed there. You experienced so long ago back here. Just think about how delightful it'll be. When you stop ascending in groups and you're just out there as an individual. And you stumble upon, the needle in the haystack. I mean, there's, an uncountable number of ascenders all over the place. And you stumble upon one that's from our planet.
You came from Urantia. Oh my God.
Okay.
Before or after the paper?
Now, there's something that should, catch your notice here. If you're, a long-time student, let's say it that way. One of the things that's been going on as we've been going through this block of papers, the universes of beings block of papers here, we've been stepping along around the satellites and sub-satellites of Salvington. Remember? Talk about the Melchizedek worlds, and then we talked about the Verondadek worlds. Remember how, we have 70 satellites, and they're broken up into 10 groups of 7. And we went through the first group. I said, you remember, we never have gotten to the 10th group.
That's these guys.
Okay. What's up with this? Okay. Okay, so let's think about that again. All right, so the first group of seven, Melchizedek worlds. The next group of seven is the Verondadek worlds, then the Lenonadek worlds, and then the worlds of the life carriers. Okay, and you remember the fifth one was the Finaliter worlds. Okay, and then the sixth was the brilliant evening stars, their worlds, and then the archangel worlds of the seventh. The eighth, like they just reminded you here, are the spirit fusers. And the ninth are the seraphim, seraphim worlds in the ninth group. Okay, so that's how much they've told you directly. You see a pattern there. Okay. You have the first four are sons, local universe sons. Melchizedek sons, Verondadek sons, Lenonadek sons, life carrier sons. And there's a finaliter group. A divider. Okay, and then there's another set of four that are the non-sun local universe. You know, you could kind of even say they're sort of a little bit more angelic-like. I mean, you know, sometimes they'll call the brilliant evening stars super angels, and of course you have archangels, and okay, you have actual angels, the seraphim, okay, and the spirit fusers end up kind of, you know, eventually once they're, you know, fully developed,
tenth must be reserved.
Part of that. Okay, so you've got four that are suns and four non-sun local universe with a finaliter divider, the fifth group between the two of them. What's this tenth unrevealed group? Okay, it must, you know, I mean, there's only one group of beings that's left, you know, and we're reading the paper, ascending sons of God. It's got to have something to do with ascending son of God, but you know it's not literally the father fusers, the son fusers, or the spirit fusers. What is it? Who are, well, they're related to the finaliter worlds. What kind of ascending sons occupy the 10th group? There's another group of finaliters that are ascending sons. Okay, the finaliters in the 5th group are the finaliters from paradise, like you will be one day. There's the Nebadon core of the finality. There's a very special group of ascending sons, okay, in every local universe. Every local universe has a local universe core of the finaliters. Ours is the Nebadon core of the finaliters. Who are those very special ascending sons? Remember how we've talked about magisterial sons? And you know, they start out as just a magisterial son coming from paradise. Remember, they're not God. They're not personalized deity. They're just a creature. They have a high origin, you know, but so do all the paradise, you know, natives or paradise, residents. Okay. Remember what happens with those magisterial sons. Every time that they serve as a bestowal son, and every time that they serve incarnated as a magisterial, on a magisterial mission, which is always the first magisterial mission on the world is always the magisterial son is incarnated. Okay. Every time they do that, they have an adjuster, which makes a soul, which fuses with them. Okay. There's this very special group of ascending sons, of every local universe, all those souls that have augmented, modified that nature. That 10th group is where the Nebadon core of the finality, that's their set of worlds. You see, on opposite sides, you have these two finaliter worlds, and then the four sets of sons and non-sons in between the two of them.
There's how many
brilliant evening stars are there? Not that many.
Yeah, that's true.
Just a handful. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's not about, right? It's their group of worlds. It's not like they need that many worlds, or they wouldn't have a place to live.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay? It's their group of worlds. They're the ascending suns. Okay? And they don't tell you about the Nevin on Car of the Finale until you're almost done with the Jesus papers. Way up there, and you're reading about the Midwayers speculating about what goes, you know, what was up with, you know, Michael, you know, between the crucifixion and the resurrection. They tell you about the Nevin on Car of the Finality. They remind you of this. That's whose worlds those are. They're the ascending sons that have that 10th group of worlds. And what relationship you will have to those going through is unrevealed. Even the world seer directly, you have to deduce that. But they purposely, you know, it's like they've told me about the 8th group of worlds. Why are they repeating it here? They're trying to get you to, wait a minute, we never got to the 10th group of worlds. What's the 10th group of the worlds? They're trying to throw in a little thing, get you thinking and going, oh yeah, well, it's got to be ascending sons. That's the last group of beings. We just talked about seraphim. There's nothing left. And if it's not the Father fusers, the Spirit fusers, or the Son fusers, like they remind you, it's not the Spirit fusers. you know, it ought to be pretty obvious it's not the Father fusers or the Son fusers because they're blowing through. So who are the other ascending sons? Okay. A very special group of ascending sons that are going to take on that real ascending sun role, obviously, in the next universe age. And there's revelators, you know, as they tell you up there in the Jesus papers, there's revelators that speculate about that. You know, if you think back what they tell you back up there. If you're wondering where that is, that's in the in Time of the Tomb, you know, which is paper 188, section 3. Nevin on Core of the Finality. Anyway, don't want to go way off on that tangent, but just to give you that little teaser.
It's an interesting interpretation.
That's what's going on there. All right, so let's read about ascendant destinies here.
Number 10, ascendant destinies. Spirit-fused mortals are, generally speaking, confined to a local universe. Sun-fused survivors are restricted to a super universe. Adjuster-fused mortals are destined to penetrate the universe of universes. The spirits of mortal fusion always ascend to the level of origin. Such spirit entities unfailingly return to the sphere of primal source.
Okay. We've talked about all that a number of times. Just, I want to make sure you notice that here they're using the language precisely as we try to do. Remember, you ascend to perfection, so you're in a vertical mode, and then you're in a horizontal mode after that, then you penetrate to completion. Right? See, they're destined to penetrate the universe of universes. That second half of your career as a finaliter is where you're penetrating to completion. Okay, and completing your relationship with the seven super universes. So they're going to remind you of how you have that on the local universe level. They've told you about the Nevin on Core of perfection already with the spirit fusers, you know, so they're ascendant half, but then they go horizontal and penetrate the whole local universe, and they're finally completed that. They are inducted into the Nevin on Core of completion. Right? So there's two cores in Nevin on, one for the perfection half and the other for the completion half. Okay?
Spirit-fused mortals are of the local universe. They do not ordinarily ascend beyond the confines of their native realm. Beyond the boundaries of the space range of the spirit that pervades them. Sun-fused ascenders likewise rise to the source of spirit endowment. For much as the truth spirit of a creator sun focalizes in the associated divine minister, so is his fusion spirit implemented in the reflective spirits of the higher universes. Such spirit relationship between the local and the super universe levels of God's sevenfold may be difficult of explanation, but not of discernment, being unmistakably revealed in those children of the reflective spirits, the seraphic voices of the Creator Sons. The thought adjuster, hailing from the Father on paradise, never stops until the mortal Son stands face to face with the eternal God.
Okay, you know, that explanation about the sun fusers, I already gave you back when we were talking about the sun fusers, you know, reminding of technically how that's done. It's a fragment of, you know, the reflective mother spirits that that is reflectively synchronized with the creator sun, just like those seraphic voices of the creator suns. One little thing, notice how they, you know, beyond the boundaries of the space range of the spirit that pervades them, right there at the beginning. You know, we talk about how you have a spirit-mind womb of Nebadon in our case, okay? And, you know, usually we think about about the mind womb part of it, you know, and going outside of it and coming unplugged mindily. Here they're reminding you of how this spirit fragment you have, see, is a lot like I was saying those adjutants are, where it's spirit penetrated down to mind, so they're mind spirits. See, even though you're kind of used, you know, just down there in the mind with it, it has a ceiling that has the same boundary, right? And so, you know, at that point, when you're finally have completed, you know, I shouldn't say that, when you, you know, when you've finished as a spirit fuser your ascension and you're inducted into the Nebadon core of perfection, you know, you're now, you know, going around as a spirit being rather than a Marantia being, okay? And, but that spirit that is your body is confined to the boundaries of Nebadon because it's really part of her. I mean, just like your mind right now is part of her. So think about that. It's almost like she has a spirit substrate and all these spirit-fused mortals, their bodies are like little waves moving about on that spirit substrate, you know, and so they can't go outside of the boundaries because they can't go out off the substrate. You know, it's a very interesting, you know, way to think about them. They're individuated, yes, from a lower perspective, but kind of at the very ceiling, they're not really, see, individuated. They're still part of her, okay? And the only way they can go outside is if they're modified. See, and that umbilical cord at the top, that spirit umbilical cord is snipped so that they can go outside of her womb.
That's why they say ordinarily.
Yeah, yeah. And they're about to explain the, you know, sometimes when they go beyond. But yeah, so ordinarily, you know, they're confined. They have to be modified, you know, to go beyond. And we talked about it, you know, same way with the sun fusers. You know, they're part of the super universe presence there. Okay.
The mysterious variable in associative technique whereby a mortal being does not or cannot become eternally fused with the indwelling thought adjuster may seem to disclose a flaw in the ascension scheme. Sun and spirit fusion do, superficially, resemble compensations of unexplained failures in some detail of the paradise attainment plan. But all such conclusions stand in error. We are taught that all these happenings unfold in obedience to the established laws of the Supreme Universe Rulers.
I mentioned this before, how this is, you know, kind of fundamentally inscrutable to them. You know, but they know that no matter how much it seems like that, that conclusion has to stand in error. Right? But they're very direct about if they can't literally measure and analyze, you know, they won't state it emphatically. And we've touched on this a number of times. You know, and remember how back, you know, often have we asked, is this an intended or unintended part of the ascension plan? But we have not found the answer. You know, so they're repeating that, picking that theme up again here, that it is, you know, mysterious to them. Yeah.
We have analyzed this problem and have reached the undoubted conclusion that the consignment of all mortals to an ultimate paradise destiny would be unfair to the time-space universes, inasmuch as the courts of the Creator Sons and of the Agents of Days would then be wholly dependent on the surfaces of those who were in transit to higher realms. And it does seem to be no more than fitting that the local and the super universe governments should each be provided with a permanent group of ascendant citizenship, that the functions of these administrations should be enriched by the efforts of certain groups of glorified mortals who are of permanent status. Evolutionary complements of the Abaddonters and of the Cessatia. Now, it is quite obvious that the present ascension scheme effectively provides the time-space administrations with just such groups of ascendant creatures, and we have many times wondered, does all this represent an intended part of the all-wise plans of the architects of the Master Universe, designed to provide the Creator Sons and the Ancients of Days with a permanent ascendant population, with evolved orders of citizenship that will become increasingly competent to carry forward the affairs of these realms in the universe ages to come?
Question mark. See, there's two questions. You have to read them both as questions there. Okay. See, like I said, so they're just kind of, you know, bringing that same giant question mark up again for us. Notice how they're saying, now it is quite obvious that the present ascension scheme effectively provides this time-space administrations with just such, et cetera. You know, back when they were talking about the spirit fusers in their eighth group of worlds, notice how they said a destiny heaven of nature and location, much like the one envisioned by the planetary traditions of Urantia. Location. What do you mean by location? Okay. In time. You know, think about our mythologies about heaven. Heaven is in time, not in eternity. Okay. Right, so they're invoking that again. You know, remembering that you have these administrations in time, not just the administration in eternity. And even for the revelators, it's hard to give God the Mother as much weight as God the Father. This is a mighty messenger. That's what's between the lines here. They have to actually remind themselves that what's going on here is just as significant as getting to there. Right? To remember that this is half of the story. They too, all these beings that are, are committed to trying to get you to the Isle of Paradise, they get kind of lost in that, trying to help you get to the paradise. It's all about getting to the Father. Even they start to lose a little sight of the big picture and have to really kind of struggle to give it equal weight in their minds. That what's going on here is just as significant as getting to there. That the things that those that don't get to there contribute to the final result is just as important as those who get there. Okay, that's going on there. They're struggling. They're starting down at real low levels. One level above just. We decided it would be unfair. Okay, see, how kind of primitive a level that they're struggling with here to try to appreciate this. And so that's, it's just kind of an important lesson for you to think about that. That's why there's this tendency to think of yourself as being greater than a spirit-fused mortal, because you're putting too much weight on the Father. You have to put equal weight on the Mother. Okay.
Well, they do say high and exalted destiny.
Right. Sorry. See, that's what I'm saying. It's like, well, is it not high? Is it not exalted? And is this not lower? Right. See, isn't it just a simple fact, right? No, see, even they have a hard time seeing it the other way around, where this is higher than that. Right? All of experiential reality is transcendent of existential reality. You start with existential and then go up to experiential. This is technically, from a proper unity viewpoint, higher than that. Yeah, just like Gene first.
Well, we have the same tension going on here, where women and men have different functions innately.
Mm-hmm.
And women often look at what men do as, oh, isn't that glorious? I want to be doing. You know, why do I have to stay here and watch these kids? And,
right.
Which is more important?
Right. See, right. It's a simple example of this. I mean, father and mother are of equal importance, you know, and it has all kinds of consequences to high beings and to lowly beings struggling on mortal worlds to start to see things in balance and proportion instead of so biased. All right, let's keep going here.
That mortal destinies do thus vary in no wise proves that one is necessarily greater or lesser than another, merely that they differ. Adjuster fused ascenders do indeed have a grand and glorious career as finaliters spread out before them in the eternal future. But this does not mean that they are preferred above the ascendant brethren, their ascendant brethren. There is no favoritism, nothing arbitrary, in the selective operation of the divine plan of mortal survival.
Keep going there.
While the adjuster-fused finaliters obviously enjoy the widest service opportunity of all, the attainment of this goal automatically shuts them off from the chance to participate in the age-long struggle of some one universe or super-universe. From the earlier and less settled epics to the later and established eras of relative perfection attainment, finaliters acquire a marvelous and far-flung experience of transient service in all seven segments of the grand universe, but they do not ordinarily acquire that intimate knowledge of any one universe which even now characterizes the spirit-fused veterans of the Nebadon Corps of Completion. These individuals enjoy an opportunity to witness the ascending processional of the planetary ages as they unfold, one by one, on 10 million inhabited worlds. And in the faithful service of such local universe citizens, experience superimposes upon experience until the fullness of time ripens that high quality of wisdom which is engendered by focalized experience, authoritative wisdom. And this in itself is a vital factor in the settling of any local universe.
See that? Localized, focalized is a mother word, remember, for those of you studying these details. They are going to have a relationship to supremacy that you cannot ever have. Right? I mean, you will never have the kind of depth, you know, superimposed upon, you know, layer upon layer. You'll never have that kind of relationship to supremacy, you know, even as a seventh stage spirit. Only they embody that part of the whole, you know, and the only way to get that part of the whole is to not be this beeline, father-like, directional phenomenon that goes screaming through the universe, forever a transient, you know, as they just, you know, reminded you. You know, you're just constantly here today and gone tomorrow for your entire, you know, universe of universes career.
Jeez, I just unpacked.
Okay.
I'm out of here again.
Right, so that, you know, there's every part of supremacy has to be done. And, you know, and it's just like with, you can't have, you know, two different types of spirits, you know. There's only room for one part of the whole. You know, and that's why there's so many creatures. It's a big hole. You know, and all these little finite creatures can only handle one little part, and they can't handle any other parts. It doesn't matter how many trillions of years you live. You'll never have the capacity to hold what they hold because you're holding what they don't hold. That's just the way it is. All right. think that was all pretty straightforward. But there's that the one spot, see, in the book that they give you, Nebadon Core of Completion. You know, a lot of times these really key words or expressions are only in the book one time. And they only give you the Nebadon Core of the Finality one time. They only give you Nebadon Core of Completion one time. I mean, the Nebadon Core of Perfection, I think, is just twice. But you need to notice those when they crop up, because in order to really get to talking about the book fluidly, you need all of these terms. It doesn't matter if they occurred 50 times or one time. You know, every one of them is just as important. That, see how that fits into what we're doing here. You know, try to fight against that bias where, you know, you look at the word cloud of the Urantia book and you think that the biggest word in the word cloud is the only one you have to remember. No, the tiniest word in the word cloud is just as important as the biggest word in the word cloud.
So I'm going to let my cloud
adjuster
remember that.
Okay.
Because I can't remember the biggest.
Everything is equally important. You know, there's no way to start to work with the revelation if you've forgotten one sentence. You have to remember all the sentences because you got to use them all simultaneously in order to start to really move the thing forward. You have to encompass the whole of it. You know, it doesn't matter if they only say God the Almighty one time. I mean, if you're going to start telling stories, you're going to use that expression dozens and dozens and hundreds of times. Okay? So, all right.
As it is with spirit fusers, so is it with those sun-fused mortals who have achieved residential status on Uversa. Some of these beings hail from the earliest epochs of Orvontan, and they represent a slowly accumulating body of insight-deepening wisdom, which is making ever-augmenting service contributions to the welfare and eventual settlement of the seventh superuniverse.
So that just, like, there's, you know, they're trying to stress that there's no way that you're going to get a local universe or a superuniverse to lighten life without those who stay there. Doesn't matter how many people come down from Paradise and Havona, you can't get a local universe up to light and life with all those high and mighties that are coming down from above. They can pull up all they want, and you can only get half of the way up to local universe being light and life with those who come down from above. The other half is done by those who started there. The only way to get a local universe or a super universe to light and life is with those who stay, who aren't transients. Okay? Very, very important. To think about, how small a number those sun-fused mortals are. You know, and in the context of what they're saying there, how important is one individual in the midst of, you know, quintillions of individuals, all important. That tiny little handful of sun-fused mortals, the entire super universe is depending upon them to get the super universe to light and life. Yeah. Doesn't matter how many ancients of days you have and all this sort of stuff, you need those. Yeah. You know, just like you need Abaddonters and Susatia, you need sun-fused mortals working with Abaddonters, and you need spirit-fused mortals working with Susatia. All of those things are indispensable to getting a local universe or a super-universe to light and life. All these little details matter. So that striving for quality of thinking, being a part of the next age before it's here, if you want to be a foretaste of the feast to come, you know, strive for giving, recognizing quality, not just quantity, the biggest word in the word cloud, okay? The biggest number of beings in the local universe. Gabriel, there's only one bright morning star, and he's pretty darn important, right? So every individual is important.
What the ultimate destiny of these stationary orders of local and of superuniverse citizenship will be, we do not know. But it is quite possible that when the Paradise Finaliters are pioneering the expanding frontiers of divinity in the planetary systems of the first outer space level, their sun and spirit-fused brethren of the ascendant evolutionary struggle will be acceptably contributing to the maintenance of the experiential equilibrium of the perfected super universes, while they stand ready to welcome the incoming stream of paradise pilgrims who may, at that distant day, pour in through Orvonton and its sister creations as a vast spirit-questing torrent from these now uncharted and uninhabited galaxies of outer space.
It's like, I think I use the word torrent here. They're trying to imagine how many beings will be coming in from those millions and millions of things that are as big as a super universe. They're going, holy mackerel, what a torrent that's going to be.
That's just in the first outer
space. You're right, that's just the first outer space level. Right, so, you see what's between the lines, an obvious analogy that the Revelators are drawing here. It's like, well, you must assume that you basically just expand effectively the central universe out to encompass the super universes, and just like you have a Havona natives that makes this all work, there've got to be those natives, in this, greater central universe, that serve the same role. So that's what they're speculating there. And of course, it's not just the sun and spirit-fused mortals, but all the other, just like there's countless different types of Havona natives too. All right, so that's the idea. While the majority,
while the majority of spirit fusers serve permanently as citizens of the local universes, all do not. If some phase of their universe ministry should require their personal presence in the super universe, then would such transformations of being be wrought in these citizens as would enable them to ascend to the higher universe, and upon the arrival of the celestial guardians with orders to present such spirit-fused mortals at the courts of the Ancients of Days, they would so ascend, never to return. They become wards of the super universe, serving as assistants to the celestial guardians, and permanently, save for those few who are in turn summoned to service of Paradise and Havona.
Okay. Right. So those, if they are transformed, here's where they're directly speaking to that. So if they're modified so they don't come unplugged when they try to go outside of the boundaries of the local universe, that's it. They're now plugged into the super universe, and there they are. That's different than what we saw with the sun fusers. They're going to remind us of that here in a second. So I won't say all that again here. Wait till we read the next paragraph. But notice here that they're making this point that it's not like somehow they're just temporarily going up and then they come back down. No, they're being permanently modified, and they're no longer plugged into the creative Mother Spirit. They're plugged into reflective Mother Spirit, so the super universe. And so they're part of the super universe now, not the local universe anymore.
But they can't get into the local universe.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought it says they can't return.
Well, they don't return as local universe children. I'm in the super universe right now. Right, remember, a super universe is not separate from local universe. They can't go down to that level anymore. They're functioning at a higher level, but they're still they can be in the space of the local universe. That's all I mean by that.
So never to return.
Never to return as a local universe minister.
So when you are modified and you go
You'll see in a second with the sun fusers why they're saying it that way.
you can still go down, but you just can't go up until you're modified.
Well, no, just remember, they go horizontally, okay? Remember, a local universe is a super universe.
Right.
And it's just at a lower level.
So they can go down, they're still a part of that, but they can't go up until they're modified.
No, they don't.
They can't.
Once they're modified from the local universe to the super universe, they can still be a part of the local universe, but they couldn't go up to the super universe until they were modified.
I'm right now being bathed in the mind energy of the reflective Mother Spirits. I can be plugged into the reflective Mother Spirits and be sitting in this chair. Her mind presence is superimposed upon the creative Mother Spirit's mind presence. Okay, so.
But we were talking about earlier how you can't go out or you're unplugged.
Right.
So I was just trying to see if
you
can go, until you're modified, you can't go further up, but you still can go down.
No, no, but see, that's that last thing. They're not going down.
They're still a part of.
They're going horizontally.
Yes,
they can still walk around in the space of a local universe.
But it's okay. A higher modified mind.
Right. It's just that they're not plugged into her mind. They're plugged into the reflective Mother Spirit's mind that's on top of the creative Mother Spirit's mind. Yeah. They're plugged in at a higher level, but walking around in the same space.
But you're somewhat right. What you're saying is until that happens, they are restricted to the world.
They're restricted until they, right. That all the
and
first part you said.
It doesn't happen to all of them, obviously.
I'm just with that very last thing, you know, it's just, I mean, there was a mighty messenger writing this paper. He was standing on this planet. I mean, he didn't go down and plug himself into the mind circuits of the of the creative Mother Spirit. Okay.
So
he didn't go down. He went horizontally.
Yes. Okay. Right. I see your clarification.
Yeah. Okay. You
said that part of.
All right. Okay. So read that. Yeah. Like there.
Like their spirit-fused brethren, the sun-fusers neither traverse Havona nor attain paradise unless they have undergone certain modifying transformations. For good and sufficient reasons, such changes have been wrought in certain sun-fused survivors. And these beings are to be encountered ever and anon on the seven circuits of the central universe. Thus it is that certain numbers of both the sun and the spirit-fused mortals do actually ascend to paradise, do attain a goal in many ways equal to that which awaits the father-fused mortals.
Okay, so you can modify a sun-fuser, so he's now unplugged. But remember what we read before about them. They, the sun-fusers, frequently journey to paradise on super-universe assignment, but seldom permanently reside there, being as a class confined to the super universe of their nativity. Okay, like I tried to mention when we read that, a sun fuser can stay plugged into the reflective Mother Spirit mind and journey in and out. It has to do with the way, this very complex way that the central universe is constructed, that they can kind of, I don't want to describe that. They can make that journey, and it's like the womb of the mother is still following them and encompassing them. It's not literally like that, but simplistically think about it like that. It's like she extends out a little lobe of her presence with the help of beings that are in the central universe, and makes it so they can journey and come back. But they're still literally plugged in. Okay, but now we're reading here that they can be modified. Okay, now they're not plugged in. Now they're plugged into some higher mind than the reflective Mother Spirits. Okay, and remember the context that we're talking about here. When you look at the psychic circles and the sevenfold, they're referring to these two levels of local universe and super universe mind. I mean, there's another level of mind above that you can be plugged into. Okay, so they actually could be unplugged from the reflective Mother Spirit mind of a particular super universe, and now they can roam the universe of universes. Now that's an option. Okay. all right. But the sun fusers can go out of the super universe, spatially go to paradise and back, and not be unplugged. But the spirit fusers can't do that. There's no way, in order for them to leave the local universe, they have to be modified so that they're now part of the super universe. And once they're part of the super universe, then they could take one of those temporary journeys to paradise and back. Okay, but that's why they say never to return. The sun fusers can leave and return. The spirit fusers, if they leave, there's no going back. Because there's no way that you can somehow be plugged into the creative Mother Spirit's mind and journey all the way through Havona and back. There's a vertical gap that you have to cross. You've got to be up, and then you can journey in and back. Okay, that's what they're talking about there. All right.
Father fused mortals are potential finalizers. Their destination is the universal father, and him they do attain. But within the purview of the present universe age, finalizers as such are not destiny attainers. They remain unfinished creatures, sixth stage spirits, and hence non-active in the evolutionary domains of the pre-light and life status.
Okay. That's a pretty strong thing to get you to think about, okay, about being a sixth stage spirit and hence non-active in the evolutionary domains of pre-light and life status. Okay, you're active during your ascension, but in this mode you are non, you know, for that other half, which temporally is going to be a lot longer than the first half, you are non-active in the evolutionary domains of pre-light and life status. You know, when they talk about like finalizers that are here doing things on this planet, okay, they're not active in the evolutionary domains. You know, all these issues that we're up to, they're dealing with, you know, the next universe age. That's what they're working on. Right. So. Now, you just want to keep that in mind.
They just happen to be doing it here.
Right, they happen to be doing it here because, you know, they're thinking very holistically. You've got to bring the whole grand universe, you know, up at the same time. You know, and so they're trying.
You're aware of what goes on here, like when Michael comes here and stuff like that?
Yeah, remember, for the finaliters, there could be one standing in this room right now. They can observe that microphone, that my coffee cup, that, you know, right? They see everything. They see someone yawning, you know,
they're not active.
Right? Yeah, it's just that they're not actively involved in this age. They're working on the next age. Okay? So, you know, that's another thing to think about, how those spirit fusers and sun fusers, they get to spend their entire finite career actively involved. You know? You know, to a degree, for most of your career, you're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good. You put it, you know, kind of simplistically. You know, you're really working on the next stages of things. So,
when a mortal finaliter is Trinity embraced, becomes a Trinitized son, such as a mighty messenger, then has that finaliter attained destiny, at least for the present universe age. Mighty messengers and their fellows may not in the exact sense be seventh stage spirits, but in addition to other things, the Trinity embrace endows them with everything which a finaliter will sometime achieve as a seventh stage spirit. After spirit-fused or sun-fused mortals are trinitized, they pass through the paradise experience with the adjuster-fused ascenders, with whom they are then identical in all matters pertaining to super universe administration. These Trinitized sons of selection or of attainment, at least for now, are finished creatures, in contrast to the finaliters who are at present unfinished creatures.
Okay, so, you know, the fact that you're an unfertilized egg right now, I mean, see, that whole time as a finaliter, you're an unfinished creature. So you get used to that, you know, UN prefix on your nature. You're mostly potential and not actual for a long time.
Still working on visas.
But the thing they're mentioning, you know, is the Trinitized, remember when we read about all the Trinitized sons of attainment, like the mighty messengers, and the selection, like the spirit and sun-fused mortals, you know, that we're talking about. You know, and they also mentioned, you know, the celestial guardians, you know, were involved in this story too. So they're invoking all those that we learned about back in the Trinitized Sun paper here. But the key thing here, like I said, just like that infusion that we talked about with the spirit fusers, when they wake up on the first mansion world, okay, you have a similar thing happening with this Trinity embrace. All of what you're going to get in a certain way as a finaliter for all those endless trillions of years, that whole second half of your career, they get all of that by fiat, effectively. You know, that in Trinity, that's what the mighty messenger is saying. You know, I've been taken out of that whole experiential process. All of that was just eventuated into me, bottled up inside of me. Everything that I could have experienced in a horizontal mode like that, that was just put into me by fiat, and there's no longer anything I can do. Okay, that's so you, like I said, you have this ability for the whole, the Trinity, or the Mother, the individuality of the whole, yeah, as a stemming from the Trinity, to, because it innately encompasses the whole, to put the whole into someone. You know, to give them a relationship to the whole, even though they haven't literally wandered, you know, as a transient through all the universe of universes and slowly snowballed, accumulated that experience. The whole just has that and puts it in, you know, a certain flavor, a slice of it.
That could be potentially one of us, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, you could become a Trinitized son, yeah, of some sort. They could snatch you out of the core of the finality when you're inducted, and
yeah. Yeah.
Right. But see, that's so that, you know, again, to just appreciate, that's something the Father can't give someone. You know, Father's not the whole or the individual of the whole. You know, so there's no way the Father can embody you with that fiat completeness like that. Okay? All Father can do is give you a part. The Mother and the Trinity can give you a whole. So a whole span of time just gets all bottled up in one moment. Right?
Thus, in the final analysis, it would be hardly proper to use the words greater or lesser in contrasting the destinies of the ascending orders of sonship. Every such son of God shares the fatherhood of God, and God loves each of his creature sons alike. He is no more a respecter of ascendant destinies than he is of the creatures who may attain such destinies. The Father loves each of his sons, and that affection is not less than true, holy, divine, unlimited, eternal, and unique. A love bestowed upon this son and upon that son, individually, personally, and exclusively. And such a love utterly eclipses all other facts. Sonship is the supreme relationship of the creature to the Creator. As mortals, you can now recognize your place in the family of divine sonship and begin to sense the obligation to avail yourselves of the advantages so freely provided in and by the Paradise Plan for mortal survival, which plan has been so enhanced and illuminated by the life experience of a bestowal son. Every facility and all power have been provided for ensuring your ultimate attainment of the Paradise goal of divine perfection, presented by a mighty messenger temporarily attached to the staff of Gabriel of Salmington.
And so, you know, this mighty messenger sounds like it's probably one of the core, you know, one of the 12. Have to be, but the fact he's attached to the staff of Gabriel, you know, likely one of the 12, rather than one that's, you know, like a number of mighty messengers that obviously aren't one of the 12 on the Revelatory Commission. Okay, so just, you know, just notice, you know, they basically did stress for you what you should notice in there. You know, we were just talking, in the wake of talking about the whole, you know, the things that the Trinity and the Mother can do that the Father can't, they stressed why the Father can't, right, with those italics. The Father loves each, you know, of his sons. And that affection is not less than true, holy, divine, unlimited, eternal, and unique, a love bestowed upon this son and upon that son individually. It's a purely individual relationship that the Father has to each of us. The relationship of the Father to Katie is this, as if none of us exist. The relationship of the Father to Jean is as if none of us exist. Okay? But the mother is the reciprocal of that. You know, the mother relates to each of us just as intimately, but all at the same time, instead of individually. And so that, you know, that difference, you know, and even when that mighty messenger got all of that whole endowed upon them by fiat, did they become a drop of the water in the ocean?
No.
No. They're still the individual that wrote this paper, for instance, right? Because even though they ended up being an individual that was going to get a really gigantic, you know, in the moment bestowal of relationship to the mother, the father gave that individual absolute integrity to withstand that. Yeah, and eventually, you know, in the ends of eternity, we're all going to have a relationship to the cosmos infinite whole. But we still won't lose our integrity. You know, so you always have to understand both. You know, you want to have a relationship with the whole, and that's what the mother provides. The mother is the way for that. But the only way that you can achieve that and not lose yourself is if the father initiated you, absolutely individuated you to begin with, in potential, so that you could, you know, you'll never lose yourself, no matter how much you are related to the cosmic system, no matter how big that cosmic system gets. So you can see how this, you know, if you notice carefully what they're saying, they're giving you this about the ascending suns. They're trying to get you to see the balance. Long before they introduce the mother, Claire up there in the Supreme Papers, you know, they're trying to get you to see that there's two sides going on, the individuality of the parts and the individuality of the whole. And together you have the whole story. And it's not an easy thing to appreciate. Even revelators struggle to keep that balance. Okay? If their job is really being, you know, an agent of the Father, they can sometimes forget that there's a whole. So just that, take that lesson away, and why don't we just bring that into our reflection here as we take a moment.